Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this.
Right.
Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of bitches, get out and get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power. You have reached the sisters' night. For the new Black Panther Party. I am hosting it, the National Assistant. And these few months following up are very, very, very important. We're trying to do some healing within our Black nation. This show is not meant to bash our brothers nor our sisters. This is meant to heal us as a beautiful people, because that is which we are. We have made so many discoveries amongst within this nation for centuries. We have developed so many different things. So we have to wake up to who we are, and it's our time now. We can no longer wait for the typical tragedy to start. We can't wait for someone to harm us anymore. We have to build and rebuild what we have within us. So today, up on this show, up on this very night, we have a Dr. Carolyn West, who is an expert, who have written many books, and she will tell you all about it and how she did it. And we're just taking a look. And this is a night where we definitely want to call in and ask many questions. So without further ado, I have her on the line. She's called 253-460. You're on the air, Black Power.
Okay.
How you doing, Queen? Greetings, Queen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Well, again, I want to thank you so much for short notice upon coming on to our radio show. But I thought that you would be definitely an expert in how to deal with abuse and different things that we have had to deal with as brothers and sisters. So if you could tell us more about yourself.
Okay. Well, my name is Dr. Carolyn West, and I am a clinical psychologist at the University of Washington, and I've been here since 1997, and my area of expertise is domestic violence and sexual assault in the African American community.
Okay. And I've done a little bit reading up on you, and I just kind of want to ask you a deeper question.
Okay.
All the times it says that you're a feminist. Could you tell us some myths about that? Because I know a lot of us have a different idea what a feminist is.
I think black women and black men have just had a long history of feminism, and it just basically means gender equality, not one gender being above and more powerful than the other, but understanding that Gender is important, too. We talk a lot about racism in our community, mm-hmm. and we sort of forget that there are these gender-based crimes, and sexual assault, domestic violence tend to be based and oftentimes targeted toward women and children in our society. And so it just means that that needs to be dealt with as well.
Okay. I love that answer. We do have a couple of questions in the chat room that they're really, really wanting to know. One, I guess you gave a brief history upon your bio of your life, but I guess they still want more. They wanted to know what was your major in college?
My
and
major.
Also, how many degrees do you have? I'm sorry. And they all took a two-fold. I should have told you. I'm sorry. First of all, it's a two-fold question, okay?
Okay.
So they want to know what was your major in college and what degrees do you have?
Okay, I have a bachelor's degree from the University of Missouri in St. Louis, and that took about 4 years to get. I had a 4-year scholarship, so I did that for 4 years. Then went right into a PhD program at 22 years old, and was in a PhD program, got my master's and PhD in 8 years, also from the University of Missouri in St. Louis. Spent a year at Notre Dame doing a clinical clinical internship as I was working on my PhD. So I worked at the counseling center, and I worked at a psychiatric facility in an Amish community for a while. Then after that, I spent a year doing a teaching and clinical postdoctoral fellowship at Illinois State. Then after that, I did 2 years of a research postdoctoral fellowship at the University of New Hampshire, and that was focusing on domestic violence, family violence. So that's kind of like my career path.
Well, it's really funny that I'm from St. Louis.
Oh.
So I thought that was very funny. So I just had to throw that in there. Also, what was dealing with the Amish community? What was that like? Was that a culture shock to you?
Yeah, it was very much of a culture shock. And Notre Dame, not being Catholic, that was a culture shock too. So I was pretty traumatized that year, being in those two, as a black woman, you know, and just not feeling really comfortable. But for me, it was a cost of doing business. You know, for me, it was always like, well, the master's tools will never dismantle his house, but I still think as black folks, sometimes we have to have some of the master's tools in our toolbox. We have to sometimes go to their institution so that we can learn what they know and then kind of deconstruct that and write our own books and tell our own stories. But in order to do that, sometimes you have to sort of get that piece of paper from their institutions. And so it was hard, but it was what I felt like I needed to do.
That's interesting. Okay, a few more questions. What type of oppressions do you feel that black women and black men face?
Pressures, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pressure. Well,
oppression.
I think,
oppression. I have that Missouri.
Yeah, I think I think it's really the combination of both sexism and racism, and economic oppression is really one of our major challenges now. I mean, we talk about unemployment, and what they don't tell you is that the unemployment rate in our community is like double what it is across the rest of the country. So I think a big part of that is economic. Even though we have an African-American family living in the White House, it really hasn't changed the level of oppression, I think, for mm-hmm. most black folks in this country. And that's what's not getting talked about.
Okay.
So I think a lot of it is economic.
Yes. So when did you start writing books? And when did you feel like that, look, let me start writing books upon these types of relationships?
You know, I did my master's thesis and my dissertation on dating violence, courtship violence among African-American teenagers. I actually did my work, my research at the Job Corps Center in St. Louis because I was doing some work there as a sex educator and talking to the kids about, you know, safe sex and that kind of thing. So I always knew that I wanted to write. I always enjoyed writing. And I always was frustrated because, gosh, it seemed like there was really nothing out there. There was a lot about domestic violence and sexual assault, but it didn't really speak to the experiences and the history of African Americans. And that was always really frustrating to me. So I always wanted to kind of like tell our stories about, you know, what that experience was. How is it different? How is it the same from what the white dominant culture is experiencing? So I've always sort of written, but I just do more of it as a professor.
So, I mean, like, why do you think abuse happens in our community?
I certainly think it happens across all ethnic groups. But I think in some ways we're more vulnerable to that, like I said, because of economic issues. I think just frustration of dealing with racism in the larger culture, and then there's nobody, so we take it out on each other. I think just gender roles. I think we're really confused sometimes about how to have relationships and how to have healthy relationships, because our families and relationships were just never valued throughout history. Legally, it was not against the law to rape and sexually abuse black women. Our marriages and intimate relationships were not recognized. We were sold apart from each other. And I think that the hundreds of years of that has taken a tremendous toll on our relationships. Now, many of us do have healthy relationships or working toward healthy relationships, and we are a remarkably resilient people, but we have also had a tremendous amount of challenges as well, and that is sort of what's made it more challenging for us as a people.
Okay, this caller, this person in the chat room says that they've never heard of any of your books, so could you tell your books?
Okay. Well, my website is www.drcarolynwest.com. One of my recent books was Violence in the Lives of Black Women, Battered Black and Blue. I've been writing more for an academic audience rather than like a popular media audience. I write a lot for clinical therapists and stuff to work with this population. So that may be why. You know, so unless you're kind of working as a therapist or a professional in that way, you may not have heard of some of my writings. But a lot of my work is online and easily accessible to people.
That's good to know. That is good to know. What are your other? Come on now, don't be shy. What are your other names? We want to promote someone like you because you're really trying to help within our community, so we really want to know what the other names of your books are.
Well, I've written a lot of articles. I'm working on a book on hip-hop images right now. I lecture on media images in black women. I've written, actually I've been working a lot around black women arrested for domestic violence, because a lot of us are getting arrested after we use violence, oftentimes in self-defense. So I've written quite a bit on that. I've written a lot of just research articles on a child sexual abuse in black women and the long-term psychological consequences of that. And actually, I lecture a lot internationally around the topic and across the country. But again, a lot of the work that I do, like I'm on a college campus, so most of the work that I do is in that academic setting.
Okay, and it's also the same person. They have a lot of questions.
Okay.
They want to know on the terms of, are you just limited to the college campuses? Would you like to branch out to do other conferences, like within the Black community?
Oh, sure. I mean, I actually was one of the featured speakers at the Urban League conference a couple of years back. Some of my work has appeared in the State of Black America. So I do that kind of work as well. I do, like I was, oh gosh, I do radio every now and then. I do TV interviews. I was featured in Essence a couple of years back. So, you know, the work is out there, but I think we just sort of like don't hear about each other. And so, yeah, I do branch out across college campuses to do work just with, you know, anybody who wants to talk about these topics.
Okay. That's good to know, because we might be calling on you for something now.
Yeah, I mean, I work in churches, high schools, you know. I give press conferences on Capitol Hill. You know, so I am sort of like everywhere. I just do whatever is sort of, I do consulting in domestic violence cases. So I do a little bit of everything. My career is sort of kind of taken me lots of interesting places.
Name some of those interesting places, if you don't mind.
Norway. Who knew that they had like a Black population in Norway? But they do, and they're dealing with some of the same, you know, struggles and challenges that African-American women are dealing with in this country. I mean, women mm-hmm. of color in those countries still have some of the same challenges. The history is slightly different. So that was interesting. I go to Washington, D.C. on a fairly regular basis to do work with the American Psychological Association. Every now and then I'll go through Chicago. You know, I've lectured in Hawaii. So I just pretty much go wherever there seems to be a need or an interest. So I feel pretty fortunate being able to sort of do the things that I've been wanting to do with my career. And I've been writing a little bit more about sexual harassment. When I was in graduate school, I actually was the first African-American to get my Ph.D. in clinical psychology from the University of Missouri, and I actually ended up filing a lawsuit against them for sexual harassment when I was a graduate student. So and I've been writing about that recently. That article's up on my website as well. And I train other universities about how to avoid, you know, getting in trouble and having lawsuits. So around sexual harassment issues. So I've been doing that recently too.
What was that like going to UMSL?
It was a trip. It was.
Because everybody's not from Missouri, so you have to kind of draw them a picture.
I have to draw them a picture. Okay, I wouldn't say it's more racist than other parts of the U.S., but there certainly are challenges. It's very conservative. It's very segregated, even now. You know, I was there just a couple of weeks ago. It's very segregated, and it's certainly not a liberal part of the country in a lot of ways. And I think, there are some challenges. And when I was in college, I don't know how it is now, but there weren't a lot of Black folks on campus. There were really not any Black faculty members. I was one of the few Blacks just kind of like coming up through the PhD program, and there wasn't really a lot of support or, you know, understanding of racial issues, and it was kind of hard to do research on anything kind of having to do with African Americans that just was, like, not even valued or seen as something that was important. And so there was a lot of discouraging times where it was almost like, well, you aren't even really meant to be here, or you're not even really going to be successful. So there were a lot of challenges around just getting through these advanced programs as an African-American woman. And I think black men were even more invisible or just not even there. So it was very isolating. But I also had good people who understood, good white people, you know, who understood some of those challenges and were very supportive, too. So I think we have to also build bridges with people that we can make alliances with and not just cut off people, too, who can maybe be of help and support to us.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, like, on the times of, I don't know if you could talk about it, because I don't know if you, if the lawsuit is still pending or.
No, it's been settled like many years ago, many years ago.
Okay.
It's been
could
long
you talk
settled.
About that? Could you talk about that if you don't mind? Because I know some of our viewers are mostly women, and we have men, of course, that listen, but they would probably like to know how to deal with this kind of thing, because this does happen up on school campuses, like you say, and as well as in just in organizations and dealing with it on the terms of jobs.
Yeah, I was like a 21, 22-year-old graduate student, and he was an older male faculty member, and he just was sexually inappropriate with students all the time. He was trying to date students, try to sleep with students, that kind of stuff, and I just wasn't, like, into that kind of stuff. So he made some kind of inappropriate advances at a faculty student event, so I just tried to avoid him for a couple of years. But in graduate school, there's some courses that you have to take with certain faculty.
Right.
You can't avoid it. And so I had to take a couple courses with him, and then he just became increasingly inappropriate. He just wanted to meet with me at odd times when nobody was around. And I just wasn't really, or like come to my house when nobody else was around and that kind of thing. So he, It just felt like something was really, really creepy and wrong with him. So I tried to avoid him, and I had to take this class with him. And I also complained about some things that he had done. Long story short, what ended up happening is that he was up for a promotion. And people started writing letters about how he was kind of creepy, kind of weird, kind of sexually inappropriate. And I complained as well. And I ended up going to the administration and filing a formal complaint within the university system. Now, you have to understand, this is like, I got my PhD in 94. This was, the late 80s, early 90s. You seem a little bit young to me. You may not remember Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
I am a lot older than what I sound.
So it was around that time when the country was just starting to wake up to issues around sexual harassment, especially in the workplace. So I made this formal complaint, and there was really no system in place on university campuses to deal with sexual harassment. So anyway, filed this formal complaint, and they basically told him to, you know, step down from his position, and they kept pressuring me to file, you know, to sign a statement saying I was happy with what the university had done on my behalf. And I was like, no, I'm not feeling comfortable with that. So my major advisor helped me to get an attorney. And it turned out my best friend in graduate school had also been sexually harassed by him. And the more we talked about it, the more stories came out, the more women came forward. And so when the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas thing happened, the newspapers were looking for a local story on sexual harassment, so I started giving interviews with the newspaper and TV stations about it, and then even more victims came forward. So I got this attorney. We tried to sit down with the university and said, okay, this is just not right. You need to do something to deal with this. And, of course, you know, you're a student. You don't have any money. They figure you're going to graduate or drop out. They don't really have to deal with you. So we ended up having to file a lawsuit in federal court and file a lawsuit, also file with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission because I was also an employee. I was teaching part-time. And they made us go through a couple of days of depositions, and they go through all your background and dig up whatever they can find on you. But it ended up ultimately that the university settled out of court with us. And you don't get as much money as you hear that they make it seem like, but and just work to make the university change their policies. And so that took me so long to settle that lawsuit. It dragged on 2.5 years. So the PhD was an 8-year program, and I was in my 7th year, and I knew that they wanted to kick me out because I had sued them. So I ended up going to Notre Dame for a year, working full-time, doing my clinical internship, and just basically not sleeping almost for a year because I had to write my dissertation. I had to defend it. And I had to pass my internship, and that was probably the hardest year of my life, but I managed to do it. So those were some pretty tough times.
Yeah, I could imagine. I know how the story is. I know. And I remember those eras, ma'am. Well, that's good. Yeah. I think that's a compliment you gave me, though. I guess I would say
I'm not really unique. Black women have had a long history of doing that kind of thing. I mean, it's not really unique. I just finished reading a book at the dark end of the street, and it was about sexual assault. And a lot of people didn't realize that Rosa Parks actually was a sexual assault advocate before she refused to give up her seat on the bus. She helped a woman who had been raped by, like, 7 white men and helped take that to court and raise media awareness about it. Ida B. Wells also was similarly involved in lots of protest actions around sexual assault and lynching and that kind of stuff. So I don't see myself as unique. I see myself as part of a long history of black women and men who've done this.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, I have a few more questions.
Sure.
Okay, let's see. Let me see. I'm reading this. What are the ways to overcome the oppressions? These oppressions, that's what someone asked.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of good books written about black women in depression more recently, and I can certainly always get you some references there, but I really think the best way for us to overcome depression is therapy. I think we as black folks don't deal with our depression very well. We don't talk about it, and we tend to be so embarrassed about it. We're so busy sort of being strong and not wanting to kind of let go of that image of ourselves as strong. We end up kind of not dealing with the depression, and then we take it out by overeating or being hurtful to other people in our lives. So I'm a big fan of therapy. I'm just a big fan of talking to people, safe people, about the depression in our lives. I think a lot of the depression, too, comes from abuse. I think a lot of us are walking around with childhood sexual abuse that's not being dealt with, a domestic violence that's not being dealt with, substance abuse in our homes or violence in our communities. I think a lot of us are just traumatized, and that's not being dealt with. And so I think really seeking help, support groups, or some kind of therapy is really one of the first steps to kind of dealing with depression. Some people even need a little bit of medication until they can overcome the depression, and then they can deal with what's really at the root of the problems. And so those are the key ways that I see people doing that. And I think especially for Black men, especially for them, because I think they carry a lot of stuff that's mm-hmm. not dealt with, and it gets acted out in just such unhealthy ways, and that they can't have the kind of quality of life that they really deserve to be able to have because they're depressed and they're not labeling it that way.
Okay. Sun Nubian in the chat room wants mm-hmm. to know, how do you go about solving domestic violence situations?
How do you go about solving that? Gosh, you know, that's a really great question. I mean, if we could just fix that, then we could, like, all go home happy.
Exactly.
I think the way of resolving that, one, is getting to the root of the problem. I think a lot of people who have those issues also were exposed to domestic violence in childhood, in their family, somewhere along the way. And unless we can resolve that, we won't ever be able to have healthy relationships. So I think part of that is at the root. Two, I think we don't oftentimes have a concept of what healthy relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that modeled for you in your family or in our media, certainly, you maybe think that it's okay to be called names or to be cheated on or those kinds of things. You don't even have a concept of what healthy is. So I think really the best way of resolving domestic violence is that you got to work on yourself to make sure that you're healthy before you get with somebody else. Too many of us are walking around unhealthy, and then we think we're just going to hook up with somebody, but you're going to get somebody at your same level of dysfunction, and that is not going to work real well. So part of it is getting healthy yourself, dealing with the depression, dealing if you had a past history of abuse, dealing with that, so then you can pick out healthier people. And so that seems one way to deal with it. And another way, societally, we have to have something in place. We have to have shelters. We have to have therapy. We have to have economic resources so people don't stay in violent relationships because they don't have other options. And we have to talk about it.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. And we don't talk about it in the Black community enough. So we end up not even labeling it. A lot of people walking around in horribly domestically violent situations, but they're not calling it that because they don't know what domestic violence is. And we could talk more about that, if you want to.
Absolutely.
In terms of what it's not only physical violence, but it's emotional abuse, it's verbal abuse. It's all about power and control. Like, I really want to control every aspect of your life. It's also sexual abuse and marital rape and that kind of stuff as well. So it's not just getting hit. And a lot of people think, well, if I'm not getting hit with a closed fist or I'm not just being beat half to death, it's not real domestic violence. But it's certainly not healthy. So we have to really start talking about what domestic violence is and identifying that within our community, and we have a lot of silence and shame about it.
I want to talk more about that. I want to talk about, because a lot of our sisters especially, it's not just sisters that are being abused, correct?
Mm-hmm. No. I think I think when you look at who's getting killed, women certainly are at a higher probability of mm-hmm. being killed by intimate partners mm-hmm. than men are. But I do think that they are being called names and being treated in a way that's disrespectful and that is hurtful as well. And I know quite a few women who are physically violent toward boyfriends and husbands, and that is equally as unacceptable. Now, some of that may be because they feel like I got to fight back, nobody's going to protect me, or they feel like they got to defend themselves or whatever. But when you get just two people fighting, it just escalates the violence so much that either one or both of you gets arrested, and that's not good either.
That's true.
So I think it's important to recognize that men are also being hurt and harmed in some of these unhealthy relationships.
Okay. Well, what exactly the I guess the same caller, I'm sorry, not caller, I keep saying caller, but the same person wants to know on a, like more in depth, like go into detail, like what more of what abuse is, like low self-esteem, that kind of thing. They want to know, like, deeper, because they said that they might be in an abusive relationship and they don't really know what it is.
Right. If it's feeling like it might be, then that's probably an indication that it's, you know, something is not quite right there. A lot of times we kind of feel, if you're in a relationship and you don't feel good about yourself and you don't feel safe and you don't feel respected, that's like a huge red flag. If somebody's super controlling, you don't feel like you can be who you are, you feel degraded, you feel demeaned, you feel unsafe, you don't feel respected, those are all signs that something is not right. Oftentimes, it doesn't start with physical abuse. It starts with the emotional abuse. It starts with sort of tearing you down emotionally, where you feel like you can't do anything right. This is somehow like the best that you can do. This person has kind of convinced you that this is the best that you can do. You're leaving things that are important to you. You cut yourself off from your friends and your family, those kinds of things. That's usually a sign that something's not quite right there. And your emotions are telling you that, and you're not listening. Because I think a lot of times we kind of have an inkling that something is wrong, but we don't quite listen. And if you have a background and a history of violence in your family, you may not even know what feels healthy because that kind of stuff seems familiar to you. Or it seems like the best that you can do. So that's why therapy is so important. And talking to somebody is so important.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I listened to you earlier, and you did, like, mention on the terms of, I'm trying to think exactly the way you put it about, well, we're gonna cross that because I can't even put into words what is something that you did say earlier. So I'm going to continue on with the other questions that
okay, sure.
Asked. What types of violence and abuse are there besides mental and physical and emotional, as you said?
Sexual violence is real common. I think that there are a lot of women being forced or pressured into sexual contact that they don't feel comfortable with, that they don't want, that they really want to say no about. I see a lot of young girls in particular feeling like they got to let their boyfriends take pictures of them or something like that, and those pictures end up being someplace that they don't intend for them to be. So I think that there's a lot of sexual pressure that young girls and women feel like they can't say no to. They're afraid, like, I'll lose my boyfriend or husband or he'll find somebody else or they just feel like they can't really set boundaries in that way. And that's why so many of us, I think, are living with HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases because we don't feel like we can say no to behavior that we really don't want.
That's interesting.
So I think sexual violence is a big part of it.
Okay, sexual violence, okay. What are some ways to overcome these issues we face as black people, black women especially, in the times of, I think you already asked that about depression, but I don't know.
Yeah, about depression.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Go ahead. No, you're fine. Go
okay,
ahead.
I would. Okay. Like I said, I think part of it is just talking about it. I think that there's a big silence in our community about talking about any kind of sexual violence. I think that's how we historically coped with violence in our lives, is just not talking about it. There was an old saying that, you know, especially slave women, you had a choice between, you know, revealing the secret of sexual violence and or living with that secret and taking that secret to the grave, or going to the grave for revealing the sexual violence. So in other words, you had to be silent. You couldn't talk about it, or else you could literally be killed for revealing the secret, or you could talk about it and give the secret up and then be killed for revealing. So you didn't really have very much of a good way of dealing with violence in our lives. So we ended up really not talking about it, and there ended up being a lot of shame around it. So part of it is just acknowledging that it's even happening in our community. I do work through my church sometimes around those issues, and it's real difficult to talk about it within faith communities especially.
Why do you think that is?
I think for a lot of reasons. I think we really, really want to keep our families together. I think that there's so much negative press about, you know, black women never being able to marry, or families and relationships being such a failure. And we draw on that biblical teaching that you should submit to your partner, or it's to death do us part, even if it's not the healthiest situation. And I think within faith communities, we don't talk about sex or sexuality in particular. It's all shame. So much of it is shame-based, fear-based, so people don't have the language or feel comfortable talking about those sensitive issues when they do come up. I think we have a lot of victim blaming. We have a lot of rape myths and misconceptions about sexual assault and domestic violence in our community. We blame the victim for what's happening to them. So there is just a pervasive silence and shame about this topic.
Okay, you mentioned slavery. Do you think, what is your personal opinion about, or your professional, I should say, your professional opinion about post-traumatic slavory?
I've done some reading on it, and it's called really intergenerational trauma, and we know that from every other ethnic group. What happened, I've studied the Holocaust, and what happened to Jewish people during this, and they had a whole long history of trauma too, but even if you weren't in the concentration camps, that experience shaped people generations later. We see the same thing with Native Americans. We don't talk about it with African Americans, but I think that there is simply no way that we could have had that history and that not influence the psychological functioning of people in contemporary society. I mean, my grandmother was from the South. She's passed away now, but she would tell us about lynchings and just some of the horrible experiences that she had growing up. And that shaped the way that she was a parent, a grandparent, how people dealt with grief, how they dealt with fear. It shapes everything about who you are, and you pass that down to future generations. So I don't think it's no way that that could have not impacted us. I mean, certainly it's hard to measure and test, but I think we deal with the ghosts of that. So, for example, with domestic violence, I think part of the reason some women are reluctant to call the police on abusive partners is because we know that history of lynching, and we know what happens to black men in the criminal legal system. And we live with the historical memories of just seeing, and the contemporary memories of seeing men in our community kind of dragged away and mistreated and never and being locked up forever. So we want the abuse to stop, but we're really reluctant to deal with these systems that are supposed to help us because historically they have not helped us.
Exactly. Well, I would really be in trouble if I didn't ask you what my assistant, who has been in contact with you, and I want to thank her, Diana, as well, because she really thought that you would be a great guest. So I really want to thank her for calling.
Yeah,
it
took us a minute.
It's been really a good show.
Some communication difficulties, but we made it work. So
that's because she's shy. She's a bit shy.
Yeah.
But
that's because she tracked me down, so I thank her for that. She was very diligent, so I'm glad it worked out.
I am too. But she wanted to know, this is one of her questions, violence in the lives of Black women, what is your message that you're trying to come across? Get across, I should say.
With that particular book?
Yes.
Okay. What I was trying to do in that particular book, what I was trying to do was talk about a broad range of violence and love. So I talk about community violence. Too many of us are having the experience of living in violent communities, and that's really shaping us tremendously. So too many of us are losing friends and family members to violence. We're seeing people getting shot, people getting killed, all kinds of horrible things. So I start off talking about community violence. And then I get into childhood sexual abuse, something that is not really talked about in our culture. Then I talk about dating violence in African-American relationships, and also sexual assault and sexual harassment. So my goal was to talk about a broad range of domestic violence and intimate violence in relationships. And I also had a colleague write a chapter on same-sex relationships. That's something we also don't want to talk about in our community, but I felt like it was important to cover that as well. And then the final part of the book is on activism and healing. So how can we use the faith community to heal? How can we use media and those kinds of resources to heal? So I really wanted to talk about, and there are lots of stories throughout the book, because I really wanted to have the voices of African-American women that were there, and really talk about what it means to heal and how we can work toward healing through therapy or support groups or journaling, writing, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, you talked about community violence.
What
do you think, why do you think there's so much community violence, especially during now, because it is at its all-time high, especially in Missouri, St. Louis. All-time high.
You know, I think a lot of it just has to do with economics. I think when work disappears, like some sociologists have talked about, when people don't have ways of making a livable wage, you're going to have depression, you're going to have low self-esteem, you're going to have people desperate to make whatever kind of living that they can make and resorting to things that are not exactly legal. You're going to just have frustration and you're going to have fear. And so I think so much of it stems from just lack of economic resources. But I think historically many Black communities were poor, but there was a social network of people working together that made things work. I mean, like when I was growing up, if you did something wrong, the neighbors would get with you, and then they would call your parents too, and then they would get. So there was a network of people there to make sure you went to school or did what you needed to do, and that network is sort of coming apart. And I think part of that is due to the criminal legal system and a disproportionate number of us being incarcerated, which has really destroyed and devastated our community. So I think that that network is not there, and the economic disadvantage with the high rates of unemployment and people getting out of prison, coming back, there are no social resources, there are no jobs, and those are the kinds of challenges that you're going to have. Access to weapons and alcohol and drugs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and she also asked, she came up with some really good questions.
Oh, good.
what is the main focus of your book? Of this book, I'm sorry.
Of this particular book, it's really written, I really wanted to write it for therapists and social workers and people who work with this population, with African-American women and men who didn't kind of like know what to do. Like how we're disadvantaged, but what can you do as a professional to do some kind of intervention with this population? So that was really the focus of the book. But really what I want to do next is write a self-help book. Mm. And so I guess I want to ask you a question now.
Oh, wow. Go ahead.
What do we need? What do black women and men, what kind of work, what kind of research, what kind of books do you want to read about domestic violence and sexual assault? What do you think would help that researchers and people like me can do to help just walking around average people? I think too much we talk to our peers and we talk like all academic. So I write in a way that's not super academic, so regular people can read it. But what do you think that people, what do you think your listeners want to read?
I think I really appreciate that question because I think that you need to go around more people like myself and other people exposed to the ground, that's on ground level. Not the ground level because of a negative aspect, but just on the street, you know what I mean? Because
you're
everyday folk and we go through different issues and situations. So I think that you need to definitely get in touch with the people and kind of be around the people a lot more, because the people will definitely tell you in all honesty. They will tell someone like yourself what some of the challenges and different things that they face, especially within, if you're trying to write a self-help book, you definitely have to. You can't go without, because you have to understand how to, how to relate. It's not that you have lost, I don't mean that you've lost any type of relation because of the fact that you have a college degree and things like that, or a PhD, but it's just a lot of people may look at you like, okay, well, she has a college degree, PhD, she doesn't know what I've been through.
Right.
So I think that with the people become more engaging once you come out there with them and just begin to talk with them a little bit more. Because even like going through Job Corps, that's a great, that should be great, because I went through Job Corps as well on a teaching and on a school level.
Okay.
I did that. So I've experienced that, and I've experienced a college level. I have a college degree as well. So it's just, but I still have to stay grounded because of, children and different things. And I think that that's just like with me, with me having teenagers and things like that, I still have to know about this. I still have to know about Lil Wayne and all these types of things so I can talk with them, because they'll be like, Mom, you don't know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? And that's how a lot of our people are. We're so, we always put people in different caskets, you got a degree, so you think you're better than me. And I think that with our people, if you go on ground with them and you just kind of work with them and then write your book from there, and definitely let them know, look, I'm writing a book, and by me writing a book, I do want to get to know you a little bit more. That way they don't feel exploited, 'cause a lot, I'm not saying that you, that I know a lot of people, a lot of so-called professionals, they're
exactly
right to exploit us. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And you don't want to come across exactly like you're not even trying to, you know, exploit them. And just talk to them and just ask them questions. Like, you know, how I'm asking you all these different questions and I'm, like, grilling you, you know, baby. And if we, you know, have coffee with them, you know, tea or whatever flavor they like, because that's what I have to do as a activist or revolutionary pan-African.
Okay.
We have to, you know, we sit down and we call it breaking bread. So we sit down with our people and we talk to them and we go, okay, would you like, hey, come and get something to eat, you know what I mean? My treat today, you know. Or they might even treat, they'll take a little money out of their pocket. I'm like, well, I'm hungry. Come on, let's eat. So we sit down and just talk to them and get them to relax and just ask them different various things. And one of the things that we do experience is like the whole, you know, I's and you's and, you know what I mean? Because we don't have different we have a different type of educational background, so some of us become intimidated because of, you know, because of that and because of the money, because, you know what I mean? Because we feel like, oh, this person has this amount of money, so I can't talk to them. And you know what I mean? So it has to be something where you make them feel comfortable and just talk with them and definitely come around my circle of people, because we really need that kind of talking to, because of sexual, like you said, sexual harassment and sexual assaults and all these different elements of community violence that you talked about. We have to really, really find a way, and we need more professionals. We need more of our people, to be honest with you, to get into more of these professions so we can actually, you know, heal. You know
what I
mean?
And I think you don't have to have a big fancy degree.
Right.
To do this work. I mean, I think that anybody, you know, who really wants to write or just reach out to other people can do that. You don't have to have a bunch of letters behind your name.
I'm glad you're
to do that.
That's annoying.
So I think that's important. We have to tell our own stories because nobody else will. And I feel like I'm uniquely kind of situated to do that because I do have a couple of, you know, letters behind my name. But it's still got to come from the community. It can't be like I'm going to sit up in the ivory tower and just, you know, tell. It's like, okay, this is how it is. It's like, no, you also tell me how it is as well. And that's what I kind of really want to tap into. I mean, even though I, like I said, I come from St. Louis, I didn't come from a privileged background myself.
Right.
So I do understand, like, kind of all aspects of that, being a first-generation college student and, you know, and having to basically work my way through and having all kinds of life challenges. So I know what that's like. And I certainly have people in my family who have not had been as fortunate to have the educational opportunities that I have had. So I, for me, you know, I don't feel like I've kind of lost touch with that.
That's good. That's really good. But I only did this show for an hour because I know that you have a busy schedule and a busy and a life, and I didn't want to hold you up. But any last words that you would like to, any promotions, any events coming up, anything that you are doing or you're trying to do, or any, you know, speaking engagements, anything that you want to promote? Because this wasn't just a win-win for me. This was a win for both of us.
Well, I am redoing my website. Like I said, my name is my website is drcarolynwest.com, D-R, no period, drcarolynwest.com. Many of my articles are online. I'm actually redoing the website as we speak, and I want to put up more resources for Black women and men who are looking for ways to heal. And so what I would just do is, like, encourage people, just go and sort of, like, look at what I've written. And if you have any other questions about that, I've really done some interesting, and I write for, like, regular people, to where it's readable for just not just academics. And so that's really important to me. And if you're doing any kind of research or work in the community, to maybe use those resources in whatever way that you can. That's why I do what I do. So I'm headed off to Philadelphia in a couple weeks. There have been some young black women on college campuses who've been murdered and sort of talking about dating violence, domestic violence among that population as well. And so I just never know what the future is going to bring. You know, my phone just rings and I just have opportunities to do stuff and then I just go do it. But so the website is coming along and I'm really wanting to think about ways to make that a resource that people can go to and find some like uplifting, motivational information. So that's really my plan for the new year. And I just want to be using whatever I have to just help other people. It's pretty simple for me.
Okay.
And so that's a little bit about who I am. But if I can ever, did your folks have any other questions? I didn't want to just run away. Were there any other questions that were not answered?
No. If we have any more, we'll shoot you an email. Okay. Or anything like that, or even call you. But I just wanted to thank you, really, for, again, coming on for short notice, number one. And number two, I really appreciate you just being able to answer these questions without feeling, you know what I mean, a certain way. And taking time out from your family and really just and being another sister
Well, your sister had told me you was a homegirl. I didn't know you was a homegirl in St. Louis. I mean, of course I'd do it.
That's right. And I'm going to definitely get Elijah's number because I know that a lot of people need to really hear about the things that you talk about. And I would definitely really like to invite you to where that I live at now. Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, I've been there once or twice. Yes, I have lectured there as well.
Interesting. We'll talk about that often.
I bet that's a trip as well.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, that's a big kind of transition.
Oh, yes. But I would definitely like to invite you to one of our meetings so you could definitely talk about that. But I will be in contact with you, and we'll just figure out a perfect time for you and for myself. And, again, we want to thank you for being in St. Louis in the house. So we definitely want to thank you for coming on to the radio show. And you have a pleasant evening, ma'am.
Yeah, you be blessed as well. Thank you. And if I can do anything else, just give me a call. You know where I am.
Yes, ma'am, I do. Okay. Thank you.
Take care, hon. Bye.
Okay.